Yeah? What is it? I don't think so. I think I have one, but hang on to it. Don't give it away. Shape as long as the laptop works, we're good.
Where would you like me to sit?
Pardon?
Where would you like me to sit? Which chair?
One of these seats would be great.
Are you right here?
I will be, yeah.
Thank you. once we have the results of the voting, would you like me to total up and write things up so we don't have to do it?
Yeah, we can do that. That would be helpful, actually.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a kind of detail.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so I will I'll whip them off the wall and I head to the next workshop. A moment to zip to the room, or are we beginning promptly at 1:30? Oh, okay, then I won't go to the room.
Unless you have to.
No, I can figure.
Thank you, Bobby.
Have we tested these mics? Do we know these mics are on?
Yes. Do you want to stay up for your piece?
I may. I have to kind of see how my energy level is. I may do it just for me.
Okay.
Here.
I can flip the slide.
Oh, that's right. Well.
Thank you.
We're more centrist now.
Oh, perfect. Thank you. Well, good afternoon, everyone. You all are looking pretty good considering it's day 3.5 of General Assembly. You're hanging in there. My name is Brock Leach. I am a Unitarian Universalist minister. I work for the Service Committee, and my projects for the last 4.5 years have been strategy, mission, and innovation. And so I've been doing things like figuring out impact assessment and doing the front-end work for the College of Social Justice and working on our partnership for Commit to Respond and working on a program with PAM that we're going to talk to you a little bit about today called UUSC Justice Building. So we're going to have two colleagues who are fabulous people who are going to be here to help me describe a better way to volunteer, many better ways to volunteer. And the first is Pam Sparr, who's our associate director. And do you want to introduce yourself? Say a few words.
Oh, okay. Hi, I'm a little worse for the wear, so I'm going to sit down. As Brock said, I'm Pamela Sparr. I'm the associate director for Justice Building. I'm a longtime UU. My home congregation is All Souls in Washington, D.C. My background is as an economist, and my specialty is in gender and development and sustainability issues, both in the U.S. and internationally. And now we're joined by our other colleague, so I'll be quiet so you can introduce her.
Well, you didn't say anything about your job, your role.
It's going to come out in the presentation.
I'm Kathleen McTeague. I'm the director of the UU College of Social Justice. And I came into that role 3 years ago exactly when the college was founded. I came to it after 25 years of parish ministry in Winston-Salem, North Carolina for 4 years and then New Haven, Connecticut for 21 years.
Thank you. Let me tell you a little bit about what we have in mind for today. The first thing is to, our goal, which is to give you an opportunity to think a little bit about your passion for justice work and where you would like it to take you next, and do a little reflection on that in order to think about opportunities that are arising, which we'll talk about today, so that you have a chance to sort out what you're most interested in and see the opportunities that are out there. So the flow for our workshop is going to be to spend just a few minutes on reflection for each of us. We're going to introduce UUSC's new Justice Building Program, which we'll describe shortly. We're going to describe several new roles that are available for volunteers and congregations. We're going to introduce new service learning and justice education opportunities at the UU College of Social Justice. Some of these are familiar to you, and there are new opportunities being added to the portfolio all the time. And then if we have time, and I hope we do, we're going to ask you to engage your creative minds in thinking about volunteer opportunities you'd like to see us work on or provide. And we actually have a little voting exercise we're going to ask you to do as time allows. So let me just start by saying that there is a growing set of volunteer opportunities out there. The college obviously was set up to provide experiential learning and education programs, and that portfolio is expanding. One of the key imperatives of UUSC Justice Building is to widen and deepen the range of volunteer opportunities. So we're going to talk about a couple of those, but we're also working on adding to that. And with Commit to Respond, which is our UU-wide climate justice initiative, there are also new ways to be an activist, and new ways to be an organizer, and new ways to lead in your own community, and we'll talk briefly about those. So I'd like to just get a sense of who's in the room, and so we know how to tailor this a little bit. Are there any of you who are here looking for something to get involved in around justice work for the first time? Any? All right, excellent. So I'm going to assume that the rest of you are involved in different ways in justice work. Are you, those of you that are involved, are you interested in doing more within your congregation, per se? And there's no, you don't have to pick one. You can do multiple categories here. So a lot of, okay, that's good to know. All right. Are you interested in doing volunteer work in your local community? That's great. That's excellent. How about at the state or national level? Wow, you guys are awesome. All right. And who is interested in experiential learning opportunities that take you into issues from a firsthand basis? Quite a few. All right, we got the right group here. So we're going to cover those bases for you. I want to ask you to take just a minute and think about how you first felt called to justice work, because the majority of you are doing justice work. Was there a moment, was there some kind of experience you had where you felt, I really want to go deeper into this work? And think about what you learned about yourself in that process. Was it rewarding? Did you find there was fulfillment in that work, or was it frustrating in some way? And what did that first experience lead you to do? Just give you 30 seconds to think about that. Now, keeping that in mind, I'd like to think about where you are now and where you would like to see yourself going. Are there experiences that you feel you'd really like to have that you haven't had the opportunity to get yet? Are there things about yourself that you'd like to explore more in your own call to justice work? Is there a particular issue or topic that you really feel called to work on? Think about that for a little bit. right, I'm going to ask you to hold that thought. If you have a piece of paper and you want to jot it down, hang on to that idea as we talk about some of these opportunities that are unfolding here. Let me introduce UUSC Justice Building. Many of you know that UUSC for many years has been blessed with a network of volunteers who have worked tirelessly in congregations to support our work, creating membership opportunities for people, helping us with fundraising, helping connect people to our programs. And they are, and always have been, a huge asset to UUSC. We've took the last 9 months, and particularly a six-month study period, to look at what we could do to build on that and improve it. Essentially, the structure we have had hasn't changed in quite a while, but the circumstances we find ourselves in doing justice work has changed pretty significantly. So we ask ourselves, what could we do to better support volunteers and congregations in this work? And I was tasked to do that study along with Pam, Kathleen, and the UUA had representatives that participated with us in this. And we did, I won't belabor you with all the research we did, but we did two large surveys. One of them, we got 522 responses. We did a 400 response survey that was open-ended that we subsequently coded. We did 53 interviews with social justice leaders all over the movement. We had a number of ministers and volunteers, many of whom had been longtime volunteer leaders, who provided input. And we had two idea sessions that involved volunteers and ministers in thinking about what we could do better. And we learned a number of things. We learned that there were two very clear unmet needs, or needs that could be better met. The first was to help congregations do more effective and sustained justice work in their own communities. The feedback we heard from a lot of people is, we UUs are social justice people. We stand on the side of love, and we participate in marches, and we do petitions. And it is wonderful. But what we'd like is to also be involved with partners in our community to make change happen, and to have our congregation participate in it, and to have it be something that we can be proud of in our work in the community. And that is longer-term work, it's harder work to get going, but people said very clearly, we'd like to engage in that kind of work. The other thing they said to us is, we would like to have more opportunities to grow spiritually in this work and feel rewarded in it. So whereas we've had one particular volunteer role that's been mostly about membership and about fundraising, people said, hey, we want a wider variety of individual volunteer roles and experiences. And some of the beginning of that is what we're going to talk about today. And the big aha for us was that both in the survey and with the ministers, the feedback we got is, UUSC has something to bring to this party, because you know something about what it takes to make effective and sustained justice work happen. You know it has to begin with partnerships of the people that are affected. You have to privilege their ideas and their leadership. They need allies. They need support. You need to help build coalitions. You need to mobilize UUs to help make systemic change. There's a whole trajectory that you know about. What would be really nice is if you helped us figure out how to do that in our communities, in our congregations. But the if is, you can't only, therefore, require that we work on your issues. You know, UUSC, we have to pick a few places to play. We can't cover the landscape. But they said, you know, you could be a real resource if you were willing to support us in our community justice work, regardless of the issue. So for UUSC, that's a big strategic change. We've never thought of it that way. So Bill was very supportive of it. We took it to the board. The board was very supportive of it. And we are embarking on this work under the banner of Justice Building as a program area of the UUSC, just like the Human Right to Water or Rights at Risk. So that we are seeing it as part of our program and mission to help you be more effective in congregations with justice work. So Bill Schultz, our CEO, in addition to the many things he does, he teaches courses in social change and human rights. And he has a model for thinking about what that involves. And it's a pretty simple model, but I wanted to share it with you. First, you know, we start everything with a set of moral norms. I like to think we as UUs have thought about ours a lot. They're well-grounded. We apply those in the world through a whole series of justice-building activities that each of you are involved in. When we're most effective, that results in changing institutions and changing policies and changing practices. And when those get reflected in the lives of communities, it changes everyone's norms. You know, if the human right to water in California is now law, suddenly in California, people start to see the human right to water as a norm, not as a luxury. And then those change norms create a virtuous cycle of social change. The key thing about that, though, is that UUs have always played a really critical catalytic role on that loop. And it's because of our grounding, our deep grounding and commitment, we've expanded the definition of what moral norms are, and we've gone out and we have done the justice building activities that have resulted in systemic change. We've been a catalyst at the front end of this loop. And I like to think of it as going from, you know, the activist community, the prophetic activist community, to the mainstream. We've been an incredibly important bridge to that through this work. And the victory this week in marriage equality is something that we have all contributed something significant to, starting with the first state law in Massachusetts. So what we're talking about today is supporting this catalytic work more intentionally and helping us do it from all different levels. So this is my, I'm known for complicated charts. This is my most complicated chart of the presentation.
Oh, no.
I can do better than
this,
but I won't. You know, just like we talk about the moral arc of the universe bending toward justice, there is an arc to justice building. And we're in the process of trying to define this in better terms, but it starts with impassioned individuals, like the people in this room. It requires, you know, they learn about organizing and they have experiences and they become leaders. It requires organizing congregations and then going out into communities and figuring out what kind of partnerships can we make with the people that are affected and how can we organize ourselves with allies to make that happen. Congregational-based community organizing groups do a great job. Then it involves building stronger coalitions that reach across communities, within and across communities, including, you know, UU justice organizations and things like Commit to Respond and Interfaith Power and Light, coalitions that help realize what we're trying to do. And then ultimately, there are times when we just got to show up. We have to stand on the side of love, and we need to be prepared in unison to do that. And so sustained, effective sustained justice work has elements of all these things. And what if we help congregations by figuring out how to get the right tools and resources for each stage of this work? Because some of this is hard. It's not easy to go out and figure out who in the community is affected and how to build an effective partnership with them. But what if we became intentional about setting up this model and supporting people at the key junctures along the way? That's the long-range idea. What we're doing right now is we're going from what has been known as member services at UUSC, which was predominantly about fundraising and membership and supporting the volunteer network, to the justice building program. And it has two parts. Part one is more direct opportunities to participate in the work that we're doing. So as things unfold, you'll see programs like Guest at Your Table. By the way, the box is coming back. But for all of, that was heard very loud and clearly.
It's amazing.
But it's taking programs like that and figuring out how do we use that as a window to introduce ourselves to an issue and to actually act and learn around that issue together. So more opportunities to do that, stronger campaigns. And the second piece is equipping our constituents for the more effective justice building, whatever they're called to do. So for individuals, we envision a wider portfolio of volunteer roles and experiences. We heard from people, those need to be both things I can do short-term, kind of entry-level volunteer roles, easy, time-bound, but they also need to extend to some really professional, ongoing kinds of volunteer roles. We need more compelling campaigns to join in, and we're going to be providing those. And we are particularly interested in ways that we can engage young adults who, as many of you know, are less inclined to show up in church, but are very inclined to do justice work. How can we help them express their faith and be in religious community as part of that? For congregations, you're going to see, as I mentioned earlier, more hands-on learning acting events. We're going to be working, and Pam's going to describe this, to pilot different models for effective social justice leadership in congregations. One of the things that we heard very clearly is, even if you're a minister who's very committed to social justice, it's very hard to carve out the time to lead that work in your congregation. And there are, you know, maybe 6 or 10 congregations around the country that have a social justice minister or a paid professional coordinator, because it's expensive. But aren't there ways, like the CSJ program leader approach, where we could actually train, maybe credential people to actually be leaders of that work within congregations and serve on staff with the minister and the other religious staff? That will not be one size fits all, because there are many different scenarios out there, many different ideas for doing that, but we need to pilot some. And then eventually what we'd like, as I mentioned earlier, is a structured, self-guided approach to doing this work, so that whatever part of that arc you want to play on, you can find the tools to help you at that point. So the new Justice Building Program is a significant resource commitment. We are pretty seriously stepping up the staffing level and the resources to both volunteering and to congregational support. And the first major commitment was asking Pam Sparr, who has a long history of working in UU social justice and interfaith social justice work, to join us as the Associate Director of Justice Building. We're in the process of hiring 2 new senior program leaders, one that will be working predominantly on opportunities for individuals and activism and campaigns, and one of whom will be working on this Justice Building program that predominantly supports congregations. And we have 2 new volunteer roles to start, which I'm going to let Pam explain.
I just want to give my own appreciation to Brock for all the hard work he has engaged in over the last, well, more than 6 months, but to really get this off the ground. He has really listened very carefully to a wide range of people, and he's really brilliant at conceptualizing new ideas and selling them to a large range of people. And we're just so, so appreciative of his vision and his dedication and his work, and I just feel very grateful for being able to kind of pick up from where he has created this in order to implement it. And can you join me in just acknowledging Brock's incredible ministry and mission?
Plus he's good at charts.
Pardon me?
Plus he's good at charts.
Oh.
No,
he's a wonderful and generous soul. So,
let's see, is this right? That one? Okay, great. Thank you.
As Brock mentioned, we are going to be creating quite a large menu of volunteer opportunities at the moment. And starting out, we have 2 that I'd like to focus on today to see if I might entice any of you here in the audience. Or maybe you can help us recruit some candidates. The first one is the Justice Building Innovator. And we're looking for a small group to begin with, of people who have some organizing, some leadership development experience, who might like to work with one congregation, or perhaps more than one congregation, to help them, as Brock mentioned, move along in the trajectory of their social justice work. This position, as well as the other one I'm going to be talking about, requires an application that is available online on our website, along with the full description of kind of background and experiences that might be helpful for these kinds of candidates. It requires a ministerial reference, that form, as well as on the website, along with instructions for the ministerial reference. This particular position does not need to be a UU. I mean, obviously we want UUs to apply, but we're casting the net more broadly. It's a position that can be held for up to 3 years. And again, as the point three says, it's a highly experimental position. So not all of the justice building innovators are going to be doing the same thing. They will be receiving training from us. They will be in regular communication with staff and networked among themselves. They may be doing specific projects to support one or more ministers associated with our ministerial leadership network. They may be working with one congregation to help the congregation, for example, better understand the difference between charity and justice as they try and move forward in their work. Or if a congregation is in a different space, it may help connect the congregation to local partners, to their state action networks. So if you have any bold or interesting or juicy ideas for how we might use these justice building innovators, please send them my way. They will be helping to pilot programs. For example, I've been talking with a lot of youth coordinators from different congregations while here at GA, and they're kind of getting excited about how we might work with youth coordinators to do some interesting programming in terms of social justice training and opportunities with UU youth, for example. There may be a possibility for a stipend, which could, I'm sure, help for people for whom volunteering intensely is a great time and energy requirement. Sure. That's a little loose.
Can you repeat the question?
Certainly. Thank you, Kathleen. The question was, how many people ideally are we hoping for this first round of folks? I'm thinking very conservatively, maybe 10 to 15. If we get more who look like really great people, then we can obviously have a larger number. But because this is so new and experimental, and it'll also, I know, take some time for people to really hear about this, so we really encourage you to help advertise it. We're asking people to apply by December 1st so that we can complete the review process by the end of the year and start kind of the first peer group of justice building innovators. They can all kind of train together early in the new year. So do we have any other questions about justice building innovators before I go on to our second opportunity? These are for people, we're really looking for people who are dynamic, outgoing, entrepreneurial, spirited, can see connections, can see possibilities, think out of the box, are warm, dynamic. Any other good adjectives? Walk on water. of any age. Yes, I think, do we have another question in the back? Yes, ma'am.
How will you choose the congregations?
Well,
no,
the ideally, I mean, there's a two different ways. It could be that your congregation says, oh, wow, we'd really love a justice building innovator, and you know someone who is in the congregation who probably would be a really good fit for the role, then that person would apply and the minister would say in the minister's reference, we've done our own discernment process and we'd love for this person to be a justice building innovator. So it would come up naturally from a discussion process and discernment process within your congregation. It could be that someone unbeknownst to your leadership team says, wow, this sounds really cool. I'm out of college and I don't have a, you know, a formal job yet. This sounds like it really speaks to me and I'd like to do it. And that person is required to talk to the clergy person before or while applying in order for it not to be a surprise with the clergy person. Or if we get a candidate and we don't have the ministerial reference, we'll call the ministerial team and talk with the team about that. Does that help you answer things? What congregation are you from?
I'm going to Lakeland, Florida.
Great. Well, you know, Brock is based in Florida. So we expect great justice building innovators coming out of Florida.
That's a big state.
There are a lot already. Good. Any other questions before I move on? Because I know I only have 15 minutes for my section, and I don't want to cut into Kathleen's time. Oh, yes, one other question, and I'll quickly move on.
Is this
excuse me. The justice building innovator is, I mean, my gosh, if someone would like to make it a full-time volunteer commitment, fabulous, we'll take you, but it doesn't have to be full-time.
But it's a volunteer
position. It's a volunteer position. And how much time it might take may depend on the particular circumstance of the congregation or congregations that you're working with. And it's a significant commitment. I mean, not to be, to be very honest about it, but it does not at all need to be full-time. Does that answer you? Okay. I'm going to just quickly move to the next one, which I'm sorry, it kind of is cut up at the top. The full title is Congregational Membership and Events Liaison. As mentioned, this one also requires an application and a ministerial reference. It is a three-year term with the possibility of renewal. In terms of the ideal talents, it's kind of a combination of someone who is an organizer and knows how to inspire and mobilize people to work well together. It's partially someone who is an educator and understands how different social justice issues relate from nationally, internationally, and locally, and how different justice issues connect with each other. And one part kind of salesperson. This particular volunteer role is a crucial responsibility as being a two-way communications hub between UUSC and the congregation to kind of provide feedback in both directions. In terms of, we are, as Brock mentioned, going to be trying a lot of new programming and initiatives, and in anything experimental, some things will go better than others, and we need feedback to reshape it and revise it and make sure it is working. And the only way we get that feedback is from people on the ground who are trying it and can offer us honest feedback. So that's one thing that the liaison will offer. The other part of the communications responsibility is that as we build out all kinds of opportunities and programming, this person is charged with bringing that back to the leadership team of the congregation and seeing where the fit is with your congregation's needs and interests in order to try and do a great job of making sure that everyone in your congregation knows about the resources and opportunities that are available. Finally, this person is also in charge of not themselves necessarily doing it, but mobilizing other volunteers to help implement Guest at Your Table and Justice Sunday and possibly other programs that are kind of traditional programs that UUSC offers. Any questions about this particular volunteer role? Yes, ma'am, and then we'll go to the gentleman up front. Good questions. So the questions were, is the deadline the same as the Justice Building Innovator? And if so, what happens to Guest at Your Table? The deadline is, it's an ongoing rolling basis, because ideally we would like a liaison in every fellowship and congregation in the U.S., but that will take different amounts of time to make happen. In the meantime, Maxine Neal, who's the Director of Institutional Advancement, and her team would love volunteers, either existing representatives or new folks, to help with Guest at Your Table for this fall, because we realize that this year is kind of a tricky transitional year. So if you have an interest in that, we'd love to have your help with that this fall. Does that get at your question? There was a gentleman up here. Yes, sir. Not really. No. So the question was, is this in terms of how to understand the distinction between Justice Building Innovator and the Membership and Events Liaison? The Membership and Events Liaison is more a communications hub and planner and mobilizer in terms of programming and connecting the needs of the congregation with what UUSC can offer. The Justice Building Innovator is kind of a combination organizer within the congregation as well as potentially an organizer in the larger community, as well as someone who might bring particular training and educational resources to bear in the situation. Absolutely, absolutely. We're already in dialogue in some parts of the country to do cluster work and regional work, and I see Brock is very eager to add a comment, so I will be quiet and allow Brock to fill in here.
Your question's a great one. I was just going to add to what Pam said. The Justice Building Innovator role, what we need is a cadre of people who are going to help us build out the tools here that can be used in congregations. So ideally, a congregation would say, hey, we want to be more effective in this work, and we're willing to pioneer and pilot with you what this is going to look like. But you just mentioned an example of the kinds of things we need to understand. There are probably four or five different suggested models for how you have social justice leaders in congregations. One would be a cluster model. Another would be somebody who is more like a part-time paid staff person. Another might be somebody who is working part-time in the community and part-time in the congregation. So figuring out and proving up some different models for that we could then translate to different congregations. We need a cadre of people that will go with us on that journey. And so that's what that role is really all about.
And they all won't look alike.
Right.
Yes, sir. Okay. Brock, is this presentation going to be available online for
yes.
folks?
Yeah, it will be online. Okay.
Thank you. We'll take more questions later.
So, as we adjust the projector, thank you for that. I want to introduce, again, Kathleen McTeague. Kathleen started 3 years ago taking an idea that was on paper and converting it into the reality of the College of Social Justice.
And that program is getting, by the day, deeper and more effective. And there's a new set of ideas just on the horizon. And Kathleen, I know, wants to share those with you. Would you like us to go online to do that, or do you have a preference?
No, I'll just talk.
Okay.
I think that's easier than trying to set something up.
I did create a link, which I think we can get online if you want.
That's right. So I will, though, tell you, the College of Social Justice does have its own website. You can get to it either via UUSC's or the UUA's, or you can just go to uucsj.org. So all of our programs and all of the justice framework that we've created to support those programs is available on that website. So first, let me just ask, how many of you have already heard about the College of Social Justice to the point where you kind of know what it does? Can I just see? That's so great. Even a year ago, if I asked in a crowd this size, I'd have maybe 5 or 6 hands go up. So I'm really thrilled. I know you're self-selected and all that, but it is gratifying to see that shift happen. It's a long runway to take something from just an idea, particularly when, as with the College of Social Justice, it's a collaboration between two institutions that have operated quite separately for a long time, the UUA and the UUSC. So it's really lovely to see us beginning to grow into the vision a little bit more and to recognize we are finally breaking through the massive amount of noise that all of us have to sift through all the time to get information these days. So the College of Social Justice was founded around a pretty simple idea that is not necessarily simple to put into action. The simple idea is to inspire and to sustain new ways of doing faith-based justice engagement on issues that are local, national, and global, depending on what people choose, with the primary methodology being justice education that has at its heart an experience, so experiential learning. The reason for that focus on experiential learning is that so many of us, in a wide variety of ways, had, especially as young people, sometimes as adults, experiential learning opportunities that quite literally changed our lives. Some of us made different vocational choices because of those experiences. Some of us decided to go back to school because of them. Some of us retired early so that we could pour ourselves into a new calling. So these are extremely powerful experiences. And it's not too difficult to understand why. It's because we don't, you know, we think of learning as being primarily cerebral. But there are a whole lot of other ways we learn. We learn kinetically with our bodies. We certainly learn emotionally. We learn spiritually, if we believe there is such a thing as having a spiritual life. And experiential learning brings all of those things together, usually in the context of community, which magnifies the experience. So it can be experiential learning in the form of a traditional service learning trip, as when you travel somewhere outside of your home turf and go to a place like Haiti or a place like hurricane-devastated Brooklyn or some other location to be of use in some way. But experiential learning has other ways than it manifests, too, at least within the vision of the College of Social Justice. So we have experiential learning journeys that are short-term, between 1 and 2 weeks long. But we also have developed experiential learning programs for high school youth specifically that offer a combination of theory, that is deep justice learning, with some kind of hands-on experience, seeing those theories put directly into use. Then there's a third category of experiential learning that we've designed for young adults, and we're now in our third year of these, which are summer-long placements as internships with justice organizations in the United States and abroad. This summer will bring us up to a total over the 3 years of, I believe, 37 young adults who've been placed in these contexts. And our focus in this program has been particularly on young adults because we recognize that these are people who are right on the cusp of making vocational choices. They're just about to decide what they're going to be when they grow up. And even though they're already in programs of study of some kind, to help them imagine themselves vocationally in some kind of justice work is a part of why we've crafted these summer-long internships. So those are three sort of large categories of experiential learning that the College of Social Justice already has up and running. There are two additional categories that we're just beginning to dip into now. One, which has been on our horizon for a long time, but we just didn't quite have the bandwidth to actualize, is this concept of skilled volunteer placements. It's a little bit like the internships, only it's for adults of all ages. And the idea is that when you have well-developed skills through your vocation or through your volunteer work, there are lots of ways those skills could be put to work outside of your paid job. And for people, particularly with the freedom to travel for a week or a month or even 6 months to some other setting, we want to eventually have kind of a matrix of connection at the College of Social Justice where a partner organization can say, we need someone to work with us for a month who's got videography skills to create, for instance, an outreach video for our organization. That would be just a random example. And we would try to find the right person to plug into that. That was the idea we were thinking of for skilled volunteers. The way that we had an opportunity to try it out this spring was quite different. And it's that a UUSC partner called Raices, which works in San Antonio, Texas, with refugees primarily coming up from Central America, told the UUSC staff person who works with them, Rachel Freed, that they were expecting a new surge of undocumented children and women coming across the border from Central America in June and July of this year, and asked whether or not we felt we had capacity to recruit volunteers for them with two specific skills, one or both of these skills. People who are legally trained, that is lawyers, legal aides, law students, and or people who are fluent in Spanish. Because if the people they were trying to help didn't get connected with legal assistance, they get put in the deportation funnel. And they're often being deported to places where their lives are in danger. So we didn't know, but we really quickly, within a period of a few weeks, created a kind of a job description for this volunteer opportunity, an application process, set some dates for two different cadres to start, and put the word out. And within a matter of just a few weeks, we succeeded in recruiting. We had actually almost 40 applications, but we ended up out of those 40 with 20 solid volunteers who had exactly the skills that they were seeking, who are now half of them are already in San Antonio now volunteering for anywhere from 1 to 8 weeks. These people are there in San Antonio. And to our astonishment, out of that cadre of 20, almost three quarters of them are young adults, which was not our target audience. We thought we were going to get a bunch of people who were retired. And so it was a really startling actualization of this dream of being able to plug in skilled volunteers. And it's back to what Brock said in his introduction. What we know is that a lot of our young adults, however much they may consider themselves UU, they're far more likely to step up into a hands-on volunteer opportunity than they are necessarily to go to Sunday services. So we see this as a beautiful opportunity to help them get connected to their faith. The other thing that we're expanding into this summer and early fall are two forms of justice training programs. One is explicitly targeting young adults, and it was CSJ's contribution to the big collective endeavor called Commit to Respond. We have a training this August for young adults who want to ratchet up their game around climate justice, from being young people already committed to working climate justice to actually being organizers. So we have a solid 4-day training in Chicago. We have 20 people planning to attend, and we're hoping a few more might join us, who are going to learn some of the fundamental skills of organizing. And then working with the existing Young Adult Climate Justice Network, we're going to help strengthen that network and continue to support those young people as they try to plug into their own communities with these newly honed skills in climate justice. We fully expect that as the College of Social Justice, we're going to learn as much from doing that pilot training as the participants are going to learn. And we'll know more after August about what the next iteration of that might be. We're also working with another UUSC partner called the Food Chain Workers Alliance in Chicago, at their request, to bring in some allies from our congregations in Chicago and in Cincinnati to accompany them on a training program for food chain workers and allies to help launch a couple of campaigns in Cincinnati and Chicago and a couple of other cities. So this is a lovely example of what we are most hoping for in our programs of working as allies to frontline communities. The Food Chain Workers Alliance links together food chain workers from field, that is farm workers, to fork, people who are working in restaurants all around the country. Food chain workers are among the most vulnerable workers in this country and among the lowest paid workers in this country. And there's 20 million of them, if you count that entire chain of connection. There are 20 million workers in this country in the food chain. So they want to do an organizer's training, but they want to do it with workers and allies together. So again, it's an experiment. We don't know for sure how it's going to go, but we're very eager to learn everything we can. I want to say one other thing about the entire arc of those programs that I just gave you kind of a quick brain dump on, which is that on our website, you will find, as you look at the website, on the far right-hand side of the five tabs across the top, study resources, it says. All of the resources that we've developed over the last 3 years to support the entire range of our programs are available online. Extremely straightforward, extremely easy to figure out where they are, what you want, and they are all available to be used in any context. They're not just for our programs. So the pedagogy that we applied in the creation of those is the idea that in doing any experiential learning, it's only as good as the learning framework that precedes it and that follows after it, not just during it. So part of the idea behind our study resources is that before you go on a program, whether you're a high school youth going to Tucson this summer or you're an adult going to Haiti, we want you to deeply engage study materials before you go so that you're not just learning about the environment and the partner organization there, you're actually learning about yourself. You're learning to be aware of the lenses through which you see the world. Simply by virtue of being raised in the United States of America, there are lenses that we need to be aware of before we go to a place like Haiti so that we don't make some of the perilous missteps that give service learning programs a bad name. So those resources are on our website, and because we're really fundamentally a justice education program, we will continue to build those out. They include resources to take into your congregation with you after you have a justice education program with us. And those resources right now are focused on climate justice, immigration justice, and First Nations work. But they will continue to be built out, especially in the direction of anti-racism and what it means to understand being white in this society and how we can engage as allies in the struggle against racism. So I'm going to stop there to make sure we have at least a little bit of time of Q&A. And if you've heard some similarities with the vision that Pam has described, Pam is facing the exact same struggle that I faced 3 years ago, which is taking a really big idea and putting feet under it. So we work very collaboratively. My office lives at the UUSC, even though I am the College of Social Justice is the child of both UUA and UUSC. And Pam also works very closely with her colleagues at the UUA. So this is another example of deep collaboration in service of our movement and of our people. And stay tuned to see what it looks like as it develops.
Do you want to take questions now?
Okay, sure. Do you want me to? Yeah, so I'm happy to invite your questions. I would actually ask you to come up to the mic to ask them because that saves, is there a mic in that stand?
Yeah.
Okay, I can't tell. That saves us having to repeat your question and allows everybody to hear you. And please address your question to any of the three of us. It doesn't
yes,
have to be
so let me address it to all three of you. First of all, I want to commend you on the collaboration that I've heard about both today and in previous parts of GA around the work that you've done together, because I see it as is really transformational, and I congratulate you for doing the work that you've done.
Thank you.
And our work in social justice, our congregation is recently looking at a book called Toxic Charity, which criticizes the creation of dependence in so much of the charity industry that's going on now, and suggest that there be a focus not on giving but on the development aspect. So as I listen to your presentation, it sounds like you've taken that tact, and I'm curious to hear more about your sensitivity to the issue of who is this charity serving? Is it serving me because I want to feel good about myself and helping you, but I'm creating a dependence on you, or is it about your needs and how I can align with your needs and help you develop?
Great, thank you for that. Let me answer briefly, and then I think either Pam or Brock might want to speak to it too. The College of Social Justice inherited the vision of both the UUSC and UUA in terms of how they go about justice work in the world, and in particular when it's outside of the United States. And they both have an absolute rock-solid commitment to working with partner organizations that are indigenous. So we don't start an NGO in Haiti. We work with a Haitian organization, for instance, that was founded by and of and serves the same people who are making decisions for it. Our primary partner in Haiti, as an example, is the Papai Peasant Movement, which has been around for 40 years. It's Haitian-founded, and it serves small farmers in Haiti. So the criteria that the College of Social Justice uses to say, we have to know why we say yes to going somewhere and why we say no to going somewhere. And it's very simple, but very important. One is a partner institution. So our relationship is institution to institution, not to one person who has a great idea. The second is that it be a justice program, not a charity one. So we don't work with organizations that are flying in people to build a school for somebody, right? We work with people who are, for instance, looking at why isn't there already a school there? What are the systemic injustices that deprive this population or this community? The third criteria specific to the College of Social Justice is that we want to make our choices based on where there's a place for people to dig in when they come back home from that experience. So we don't just want people to go to Haiti, feel good about what they've done there, and come home and forget about it. We want them to have an experience there that they can then put to work in crossing boundaries in their own community, for instance, being bolder and braver about that, and learning how to hear what an ally is saying instead of coming in and saying, I've got an idea for you. And let me stop there and see if either Brock or Pam want to also address that question.
I would just say that UUSC's theory of change, theory of social change, is that human rights can't be acquired by anyone but the people affected. They have to be exercised by the people affected in order to be sustaining. But having said that, people need allies in the journey. So the very basic ethic of UUSC is everything we do starts with grassroots partnerships. It starts with who is being left out, what ideas do they have, how is it that they could use allies, what leadership do they have, and what we do is help them assert and enjoy human rights. So every single program that we do is based on that ethic. And I can tell you there are a lot of folks who are very well-intended people who see a problem in the developing world in particular and set up a charity, and they do it for 4 or 5 years, and then they just completely flame out because the need is so big. And some cases, you know, we were able to say, well, let's go back to the basics of how to solve the problem and what people themselves can do that can be sustained. But anyway, it's an excellent point.
Maybe just one little additional piece is I do think, though, that one other piece that we haven't mentioned in terms of the underlying assumptions about how we approach our work is that we understand our liberation is totally bound up in other people's liberation as well. Mm-hmm. So, and that depends on where we are in the dynamic of oppression. But the partnership also involves our liberation as well.
Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Sally Hartman. I'm from the Unitarian Universalist Society of Iowa City. And my question is about involving the congregation. We've done some great things. We have a project on Faithify. We just got funded for Fund for a Just Society, partnering with an organization in our city. But all of this work is done by such a small group of people, and I'm wondering what can we do to expand that?
Mm-hmm. Sounds like your department.
Okay.
You want to come up here or you want to do it from there?
Is it okay if I just stay here? It creates people who feel really dissed or burned out or angry, and then it just is kind of a very negative spiral. Or I know also I have experience with churches where there are like 8 different issue groups and 2 people in each, and then they kind of compete against each other for time and attention and whatever. So we have to kind of break that cycle. I'm hoping that, for example, with the Justice Building Innovators, that they can provide to create a different kind of framework and container for the discussion in a congregation about that. My sense is that part of it is that we don't step back and take the time to analyze how are the issues that we're passionate about, how are they connected? Because actually, if you start to do a more structural analysis, you may see that the root causes of what we think are as disparate issues are actually connected. And there can be ways that we can be more strategic in both choosing our partners and choosing what we do that actually can have great impact in more than one area. For example, that might address both racial justice, economic justice, and possibly even environmental justice. And there also, I think, we have to look at how we understand leadership and how we nurture each other so that 3 people just don't have a grip on leadership in a certain way and don't create a welcoming space for the gifts and the talents of a much broader range of people in the congregation. And I bet Brock might want to add to that.
I was just going to add one comment to it, which one example. We did a, in my congregation, we did organize ourselves around commit to respond. What could we do collectively around climate justice? And if you'd asked me what we should do, I had ideas about doing solar panels in the church and so forth. We got people together, and the energy in the room was all about a transition to healthy eating that was planet and human friendly. And there was enormous energy for that, and we ended up with 90 volunteers who were working on various aspects of that. But we didn't start with, here's the thing we're going to do. We started with the interest in climate justice and invited people in. And they came up with this idea and are off and running on it. And we have, I think, 11 people who signed up to be organizers of it. So, and I'm shocked by it. But anyway, it's finding a way to listen to the energy in the congregation.
And I want to add just one thing, wearing my hat as a minister and someone who worked and served parishes for 25 years. I think it's also important to remember that our congregations are called to be much more than just hubs of social justice. They're called to be places of spiritual nurture, places for worship, places for song, places to teach our children about religion, not just social justice. And so they have a complicated task in front of them. And everybody contributes to the life of that congregation, and that life in turn nurtures the justice work. So I don't want to disparage all those people who support the life of the congregation in ways other than being the activists, because they help make the whole thing possible as well. And it's a holistic picture. Go ahead.
My name is Holly Kerr. I'm from the Deerfield, Illinois church. We do a lot of charity. And if there's social justice done, it's done by people outside the congregation. Do you have any thoughts as to how you can sort of bring it back into the congregation?
I've got some. Pam may have
some
too. Why
don't you start?
So I actually, the last couple of years, I've spent a lot of time on the road preaching and doing workshops because it was one of the ways I knew to help get the CSJ up on people's radar. So I got to hear a lot about the struggles within congregations with justice work, and the woman who spoke earlier about it just being a tiny cadre was one of the things. And you know, the majority of our congregations have what they call social justice that if you look at what they're actually doing is very often heavily focused on service. It's really good work, but is working in a soup kitchen or tutoring children in a school, and it very often stops there. So I think one of the tasks is to see and honor the service work that congregations do, because congregations are frankly very well suited to do service work. But then to help people see the whole spectrum, which also includes agitation, education, activism, coalition building, protest, that whole range of things, advocacy, that helps take people a greater distance. So it's not stop doing service and do this instead. It's helping people to see that whole spectrum and to get inspired to find a place within that spectrum where they can lodge themselves. It's also very powerful for people to be able to see that they can skate up and down that spectrum. I mean, there might be, if there's one particular issue, like let's say your church is already working in a homeless shelter of some kind, why not start with that base? And, you know, read a book about the disparate, you know, economy in our country and the growing wealth gap. See what's going on in your own area with worker justice centers. See what's happening around the fight around minimum wage so fewer people have to use a soup kitchen. You know, there's a whole spectrum of things that can happen. You want to add to that?
Well, I just think, you know, as we look at having healthy congregations and healthy activism, finding the balance between acts of compassion and acts of justice is really important. And taking the time and opportunity to help the congregation engage in a discussion, why do we have this problem of hunger? Why do we have this problem of homelessness? And know that actually the congregation's deep experience in listening to the people that they are serving in this compassionate way can serve as a very powerful next step for being strong allies in terms of reshaping public policy and addressing it in a more systemic way.
Right. I would just say that understanding that arc and understanding how to help organize a congregation to have the courage to do that work is part of where that of the gap that needs to be filled with people that are really professionally trained social justice leaders. And that's what we're wanting to pilot and experiment with.
Thank you for the paid political announcement here. But there's also, I mean, just to mention, in many, many municipalities, there are really great interfaith community organizing going on that might be just a great way to get the congregation out of a simply or exclusively mode of service and into the advocacy collectively together.
Right. So I think we probably have 5 minutes left, do we?
Yeah, I want to just have one other thing I want to talk about. And then hang on, we'll take some last questions, but I just wanted to wrap up the presentation part of this very quickly. I wanted to just point out that in addition to the opportunities we have talked about here, there are immediate opportunities to volunteer with Commit to Respond. Some of that is simply joining and endorsing, and you can do that by going to committorespond.org. For those of you that are not familiar with it, this is a collaboration of 9 UU justice organizations, and it is focused on moving ourselves from feeling overwhelmed to feeling like we can make a difference in this, and building the partnerships and the relationships that can change the picture. So joining, and you will find on the website, if you go to ACT, there's a little menu at the top that says ACT, you'll find a number of suggested actions. They're not meant to be prescriptive. They're meant to be ideas. You can create your own action. But one of them is to join the Commit to Respond Climate Activist Network. And so we're building a network of folks who want to work on this area and are willing to be deployed in different capacities. So that's one thing you can do. And the other is to join one of the sponsoring organizations. I mentioned there are 9. There are 3 of them that, actually 4, I forgot one, that are are comprised of volunteers who are doing work in this area. So one is the Diverse Revolutionary UU Multicultural Ministries. The other is the Ministry for Earth and the Environmental Justice Collaboratory, which Pam has helped organize. And there's also the most recent joiner to the coalition, which is the UU Young Adults for Climate Justice, who, as Kathleen mentioned, are organizing a network of young adults. So this whole work over the next 2 years, I think it's really gonna be pivotal, and there are many opportunities to get involved in that as it unfolds. And the other thing I wanted to say about that, one of the suggested actions on committorespond.org under congregations is to form a partnership with a frontline organization. And to do that, you don't have to create it. You may, in some cases, want to create it, but you don't have to. There are lots of alliances out there that are doing things in local communities that you could investigate. And so there's resources online for that. I've listed up some of those right here. People that are working often on an interfaith basis, congregational-based community organizing networks, Interfaith Power and Light, all working in the climate justice arena. So it's a good way to begin being in partnership if you're interested in that work. The last thing I want to say is we
have begun brainstorming a wider set of volunteer opportunities beyond the ones that we're talking about today. And we have a number of ideas for those, but we're also interested in your where your energy takes you, and we're interested in additional ideas. So if you have a few minutes between the end of this workshop and the next one, I would invite you to take the green dots and the stickies that you have and visit the charts that are over there in the back of the room on the wall that have a number of ideas already on there. Some of them are ones we're already doing. Some of them are new ones. They're arrayed by the type of person who we think might be attracted to them. But they're also from kind of easy to participate in to complex. If you have ideas that have occurred to you today that you want to add to that, go ahead, write it down on a sticky, stick it up there. If you have a minute to take those green dots and vote for the three that you would personally be most interested in, we'd love to get your reactions to that because it'll help us prioritize which of these things we actually start to work on first. There's a huge and interesting range of ideas that are floating around out there that came out of our whole study process. But now we need to know where do people want to go with it. So I think that will be the end of our presentation, but we'll take some questions in the time remaining. So I know a couple of you were waiting.
Maybe we just stay and people come up and talk to us. I don't know.
I would just like to give you my email address, because if you have additional questions or ideas after you go back home, please feel free to contact me. It's PSPARR, that's P like Pamela, S-P-A-R-R, at UUSC. And love to have further conversation with you if you have some ideas or you're considering applying or you'd like to explore if your congregation would have a Justice Building Innovator, for example.
Yes, sir.
I guess two questions. It seems like you're building or intending to build a relationship with congregations in a broad way, broad number of congregations, and have a membership, and standing on the side of love has kind of that ambition, it seems like. I wondered, do you have is there a building relationship there, or?
Yeah. So that's a great question. So there are a lot of programs and tools that we collaborate with and will continue to. Standing on the side of love, I think, is ingenious, and it is a way of being visible and mobilizing people to go be present when we need to be present. And it is an essential part of justice building. What we're imagining is building a framework that covers the gamut and lets people decide where do they want to play. So it may be that most of us want to play as, you know, standing on the side of love and being visible. But it's not competitive with it. It's part of a larger network of tools and resources that are available.
So they're kind of an independent, separate option for social justice.
We've also been directly collaborating. Pam and I, for instance, are both on an immigration justice working group that includes several staff members from the UUA, including Standing on the Side of Love, and other people working within the UU network on immigration justice. So we're sort of building linkages everywhere, and Standing on the Side of Love has directly partnered with the College of Social Justice. Now this fall will be for the second time in a year, or the second time period, but the second time in 2 years, in doing a border trip specifically for clergy. So we're doing lots of collaboration with Standing on the Side of Love. We're in very constant contact with them. So it's separate, but, I mean, as I said, college is founded by both UUA and UUSC. So my colleagues at the UUA are running Standing on the Side of Love. You know, so we're all together in this.
And the key is to be working on the same issues in a seamless way, and we are. So, like, Commit to Respond has been publicized through Standing on the Side of Love.
So also just a sneak preview, I'm working with UUA staff and staff from other UU organizations to actually map out who's doing what, and potentially we'll have that available online so that we can cut down on the confusion or the wonderment, like, oh my gosh, it sounds like everybody's trying to do everything. So we are really trying to work hard at defining our roles, be really clear, and be very synergistic together. So,
yes, sir.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Dan Carpenter from Honolulu, and for a long time I've been troubled by the fact that the UUSC doesn't seem to put out energy toward, I mean, proportional to the size of the problem, where we have, I think the two biggest things facing our country right now are inequality of wealth and the high incarceration rate. Well, both those are on the list, but the energy we put out isn't proportionate to the size of the problem, and it's getting us nowhere, and we're going to be undone. And have, while we're working on all the little problems, we ignore the big ones.
Well, let me just address that briefly. UUSC, because we are in the human rights field, we're relatively small. We have to pick the places where we can have the most impact. And what we recognize, and we just completed our strategic plan that recognizes this, is that the two largest rights disruptors of the coming decades are climate change, which is going to create, threatens human rights around the world in many different ways, and widening income inequality. And our programs address those issues, but they address them by picking aspects of it where we think we can make a difference. So like the human right to water, for example, we are investigating currently a program about food sovereignty, because as the climate gets warmer, access to arable land and food is going to become a bigger issue. In the case of widening income inequality, our work with the Food Chain Workers Alliance is a direct reflection of starting in a place where we think we can make a difference in people acquiring economic rights. So we are addressing actually the very large issues, and we encourage people to do those in whatever way they feel called to. We're picking programmatically things that we think we can really move the needle on. So because we have to pick our places.
Let me also just add, I really understand your feeling of frustration, and I think I would say, in defense of all our organizations, I don't think we're working on small problems. I think we're working on some really big problems as well, and that I agree with you that those are two of the biggest problems. I also think that UUSC's work until now sometimes has not been very visible in our congregations, and that's exactly what the Justice Building Department, I think, is going to change. I think it's going to become much more evident what UUSC is doing, and I think it's going to be doing more. So thank you for that.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, this is kind of a complex issue, but one of the things that has happened in our church in Eugene, Oregon, is that we have had 8 interim ministers over the last 10 years.
Wow. Oh.
And we're exhausted because we've tried to keep our social justice, you know, going with no support, basically, from the ministers, because that is not the job of an interim minister. So my hope is that you keep this in mind. And I see that you're coming up with things people can use, but we still would love to have from our interim minister some way that they can be supportive of our individual programs. And what happened with us is we just gave up and we went into the whole, our community, and we borrowed other ministers who were just marvelous, and develop some really good interfaith programs. So now that we finally have a developmental minister who has been able to fudge around and be supportive, and much more so now this coming year, we're going to have a really good basis for our ministry program, which is now called Outreach, and we are a ministry. We are already into the community, so we've got a lot of pluses going, but after all this time, it's, you know, and I'm not getting any younger, so it's really frustrating for some of us who are just wanting to do something. So thank you.
Thank you. So I think we're we're slightly past time, as a matter of fact. So thank you all very much for coming. Thank you, Kathleen and Pam, for being participants. If you... If you have a couple of minutes and would like to do dot voting, we'd welcome it. Thank you.
Oh. I have meetings, but it's my last one.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Hi. Michael. Hello.
nice to actually
so
meet you.
So here's
person.
Where I think we're going with India. I don't know exactly when we're going to have these available, but I think in India we're less and less likely to do a delegation again for a couple of complicated reasons.
The short version
but
of what you were
doing,
the long version.
There are some challenges in India that go beyond the challenges of Huawei. It is culturally different, which is that the current government of Modi is very Hindu nationalist and very suspicious of foreigners. So it's put a little bit of a damper on the work of holding, and so we're tiptoeing our way forward with that. How is your Hindi? Well, the most honest answer is I don't know yet, because what we really want is for the opportunities to come to us from partners,
we would definitely do that, right?
Not from volunteers. And the reason is because we actually had an experience of this 2 years ago
call.
Where we weren't ready, but because of volunteers, we were really pushing to grab. We said, well, all right, she'd been leading a couple times. She was a retired teacher. She wanted to go teach English to the staff of MPP. So we set it up with MPP. Long and short of it is nobody came to her class. Why? Because that's not actually what MPP needed. And they're too polite to say, no,
this
don't come.
It's not my
so, you know, so we don't want to do that. So what we have to do to begin with is get a few partner organizations to define what they need. And then all we can do is kind of put it out there to the universe and see whether we can get the right people. We've got the time, the energy, the skill set, the stamina, whatever else. And if it's a situation like this, let's say what they want is someone with entrepreneurial skills. If it's a volunteer who's actually doing what they most want, that's a better chance. Because it's worth it. That's where the
question
is. So I honestly don't know exactly what it's going to be exactly. I just know we want to do it. In the India program,
that'd be fabulous.
It's a lot. My answer is a lot. So I'd be happy to tell you more about it. I think it might continue. I think that the partner organizations are more likely to want skilled volunteers.
Pardon?
You should. Those are places that have the capacity to receive an intern and take care of them while they go do their real work, which is radical organizing of groundless tests. So it's a different ball, and the internships in those cases are far more benefit to the interns than they are. So with the skill plan, we want to reverse that emerging. So that's why. So stay tuned. We're going to do our best to move on. Hi.
I think, you know, people object to it, but I think we have to be, it's not about being political, it's about standing up for what's right.
And,
right.
What does it mean to be an American in the world?
Immigration. What would happen?
This is a lot of
action at the UN level, so say that any country that causes such a high migration.
Well, and I've looked at the partner organization is called
Stop the Source, like you were saying
earlier. And I remember looking at it way back
when we were getting pitched in the river to begin with.
Exactly. I can look at it. We're exploring possibilities of getting
256.
Did you just go, or you're just going to go? Where did you go last?
I think, aren't we in Portland 256 right now?
No, this is 255.
Is this 255? Okay. I'm sorry. I'm just focusing on what.
Well, I promise I will look at the book.
Next session, you're going to be in here?
No, I have a workshop I have to do now.
So where are you going?
It's to the next workshop I'm doing. So this is in
talks about the spectrum of all the different ways to do. So that's a very good tool.
I'm looking for the Road to Selma session at 3 o'clock. They don't know anything about it, but it says this room.
Okay. I'll tell Brock. Okay, thank you.
It's not in the program booklet. It's a separate.
And the existing resources. He's talking about the primary resource that's on the UUA's website that shows the whole. I mean, it's a really pretty good handbook, on how to get your congregation going and whose church is using it. But go ahead and finish your thought.
Wasn't what I was waiting for. No choice but to wait and hope.
Well, I walked and walked and walked to the poor.
Exactly.
What he's lifting up is the fact that in his congregation there's a cadre of people who are really not willing to let go of
projects. Yeah, that's a typical issue. Exactly.
And it's not really social justice.
But
it's more
service. You're stuck. Yeah. Totally. No, that's totally.
I think it's going to be at the heart of her work. It's
exactly.
Keeping that out of her mind. Sorry.
Skillful.
What are you looking for?
Anyone who's ever been in a congregation understands that piece, though, at least to some degree.
That's what I'm looking for. Well, see, that says 251. Am I in 251?
This is 255.
Oh, the other end. Well, it also says
253. Thank you so much. So you're up in Madison?
Gives all these alternate rooms.
Okay.
So good. So you need to ask them when you get to one of the rooms.
Are you able to
cheer
in them?
Yeah.
Oh, so you've had 1 year behind you. Oh, wow. So here's the current answer. The current answer is that all of the initiatives that we have anything to do with are through the UUA, not UUSC. Right now, UUSC hasn't got programs in India. But, well, the UUA has 27 organizations they support. It's very robust there. Yeah, it's very robust. And many of them are focused on gender justice and women. However, the UUSC has a new person in the portfolio for rights at risk who's just fantastic. She's a human rights lawyer herself. And I think she would be very interested in having suggestions, frankly. You know, so what I would say is, let me just make a note of that on your card. I will. going to India could happen via us with one of the skill volunteers, possibly. But what I think I will do is introduce you via email to Rachel, Rachel Fried, who's this person who holds portfolio at USA. And then you can tell her directly about the organization and why you think it's worth her attention. I have no idea if she's interested in it.